You find in Parshas Pinchas, one of the topics that is found is a dividing up of Eretz Yisrael, of the land of Israel, according to the Nachla, according to the inheritance that each and every tribe got. At the conclusion of this section, the Chumash tells us that the daughters of Slavchad, son of Hefer, son of Gilad, son of Machir, son of Menashe, from the family of Menashe, son of Yosef, they came and they appeared before Moshe, Lazar, and the elders, and they said, "Our father died in the wilderness. He was not among the assembly that was gathered against Hashem in the assembly of Korah. He died of his own sin. Why should the name of our father be omitted from among the family because he had no sons? Give us a possession among our father's brothers." Moshe brought their case before Hashem, and Hashem says, "The daughter of Slavchad speak properly. You shall surely give them possession of inheritance among the brothers of their father. You shall cause the inheritance of their father to pass on to them." Now, the question we need to ask, or a number of questions, is that, as the Rav Friedlander in Sifti Chaim points out, to have a parsha in the Chumash given to Klal Yisrael in the merit of an individual is a tremendous, tremendous schus, megalim schus l'idei zaka. We transfer credit to those who are worthy. There must be something special about B'nai Tzlavchad, that they are the ones that are credited for this parsha of the laws of inheritance, and it just didn't happen through Moshe Rabbeinu himself. And further, Chazal look at the daughters of Slavchad in a very positive light. They are chachamot, they are intelligent people, they are tzadkaniot, they're righteous people. What was the righteousness? What was the wisdom in the B'nai Tzlavchad? Their father died. They wanted possession in the land. They wanted an inheritance. Does that take chokhmah? Does that take wisdom? That's something of great tzidkus. They wanted a piece of land. And further, asked the Drash David, how do we understand that they're asking for a piece of land when the division of the land wasn't arbitrary? It was based on the Goro. It was based on Ruach HaKodesh. It was based on Hashem dividing up the land. And if indeed they deserve to have a piece of land, would not the Goro, would not the lottery have allotted them that land? Like, we need to understand on a much deeper level what's really the dynamics of the greatness of B'nai Tzlavchad and the lesson that it's teaching for us. Now, clearly, on a very superficial level, as Rabbi Friend notes, we see from here the greatness of the women of the Midbar. Whether you find it by the Chet HaEgel, that the women did not partake by giving of their jewelry, whether it's the Chet HaMeraglim, that the women did not sin in speaking negatively about the land. And we see it in the Parsha of B'nai Tzlavchad over and over again as a theme. We see that the women, these Nashim Tzadkaniyos, the Klal Yisrael, in Source 6, have a stronger sense of Emunah than their male counterparts, and they're able to stand up for what is right. Understood. But obviously, there must be something deeper about this whole story, that the names of these women appear a number of times in the Chumash, and it's a great source that they have, that it's very rare to find, like we see by Pesach Sheni, that people are able to bring down the halacha and are accredited for it. So this is the question we're dealing with. What is the greatness of B'nai Tzlavchad? What lessons can we glean for our lives? Two levels. Idea number one is based on the insight of the Siftei Chaim, and he says, the Medrash tells us, the Medrash is in English in Source 7, when did B'nai Tzlavchad come to appear before the elders to ask for their rights? They came at the time that they were learning the law of Yibum. The law of Yibum is, if a woman marries a man and the man dies without children, the woman then marries her departed husband's brother, and the child then is called after the husband and inherits from the husband. So B'nai Tzlavchad came to the elders and said, look, we're five girls, we're no boys. Does our mother have to do Yibum? Does she have to marry our uncle because there was no heir? They said, no, he had daughters. Ah, if he had daughters and the daughters count enough that you don't have to do Yibum, so why don't the daughters count enough that we should have a Nachla, that we should have an inheritance? And again, if we understand that their claim was a technical claim, hey, we count for one thing, but we don't count for another, again, we've misunderstood these women 100%. There's something much deeper going on here. Notes the Siftei Chaim, Rav Friedlander's at Zal, the following in Source 8. Omnam be'emet bakashatam lachuza lo haita mitok rison liskop yirushat avihem. It wasn't about, technically, they wanted to get a piece of land. Ella, rather, yardu la'omek ha'sugya shel yirusha v'nachala. They understood the depth of what it means to get an inheritance. U'kamo she'be'er morein rabbeinu ha'gon rabbi Eliezer Dessler zatzal, she'inyan yirusha ha'ben yoreshet aviv, eino kehechi timsti. If you think that inheritance is just a medium in order to get rich, you've missed the boat. No. Ella lahamshich, double underline, et avodas Hashem, the asterisk, shel aviv, beten l'tafkid, hamiyuad lo. Every person has a job that is specific for them, has a path in life that is unique to them and their character traits. A child not only inherits the physical attributes of a parent, but they very much also acquire the genetic makeup of a parent. And very often they are here to continue the work of the parent, perhaps in a different, you know, path, but very similar, to take what the parent has done and to be able to develop it and to move it further. And therefore, when they're asking for an inheritance, they're not just asking for a piece of land. What they're asking for is, can we be the perpetuation of our father's avoda in this world? We want somebody, sheyamshich et tafkido, that he should have a continuation of his tafkid. And that's why they specifically came at the time of the discussion of Hebel. Because what is the reason why she marries her ex, her departed husband's brother? Because the child will then take on the role of the father and be able to continue what he was no longer able to do once he left this world. So that is the core, the essence of what Yibum is about. It's not technical, you know, if we count or we don't count. It's not about that. It's that just like the whole idea of Yibum is the perpetuation of this, of the person who died, that his avodas Hashem should continue, that what he started should be able to be carried forth. Just like that is the goal of Yibum, that's the goal of Nachla, that's the goal of inheritance. We're not asking for a piece of land. That's the chokhma, the wisdom of these women, and the tzidkus of these women. What they're really asking for is, let us be in that role of the continuation of our father's role. And that's why in 10, these women did not get married all the time they were in the desert, because they didn't know. What is their job in life? Is it to be married somebody else and follow after their husband and be a support and as a connector for their husband's role? Or is it to stay in their family, to stay within their father's domain, not get married, or ultimately married people in their own tribe and be able to continue his mission? There is this idea that Eretz Yisrael Nitanan, Source 9, L'chol Shevet Be'etem L'Tafkido B'Avodas Hashem. Eretz Yisrael was divided up according to every tribe's service in Avodas Hashem. And you see this by Yaakov Avinu, where he said, Zvulun L'chof Yamim Yishko, that Zvulun is going to live by Haifa, by the seacoast, because he was involved in trade. And Ma'asher Shvena Lachmo, Asher had a lot of olive trees, and they developed in that respect. That when we're talking about that a tribe lived in a certain area, it's not arbitrary. Where they lived enabled them to be the best Eved Hashem that they were able to be. And therefore, in 11, to sum up Rav Friedlander's essay, Shifatam haita kokach tahara, their desire was so pure, lamshich et avodat Hashem shel avihem, shezachu yidei kash megavlim zchus yidei zaka. The fact that they had this parsha of Yerusha, of inheritance on their, called on their name, is an indication that they were doing this totally l'shem shamayim, and therefore they became the tsinor l'parsha Yerusha. They became the conduit, because they are teaching everybody that the sharasham haruchani b'tafkidam b'avodat Hashem, it's not just about a piece of land, it's about the continuation of the legacy of a parent. Before we develop this idea of the continuation of the legacy, I'd just like to share one example of what it means that everyone has a chelek, a part in Eretz Yisrael that is unique for them and their avodas Hashem. It's obviously a very deep idea, a very complex idea. I'd like you just to give us an insight of a much, much larger essay of Rav Wolfson in Emunat Itecha, where he speaks about that we know that everything that exists in this world exists on the level of Ashan, Olam, Shana, and Nefesh, in place, in time, and in person. And he speaks about that every person has a place in this world, and every person has a day in this year, that the three come together. Notably, we're speaking in this particular section about Rut. Rut's day of the year, and again, there's a lot of Torah on this, is Shiva Sabbat Tammuz, which always falls out around the time of Parsha Pinchas. Shiva Sabbat Tammuz was when she married Boaz, when she became the Ima Shamachot, the mother of royalty. This is her place in time, and the mitzvah that she is connected to is the mitzvah of Yovel. Yovel is about everyone returning to their ultimate Nachla. And that is why we have this inyan of Yovel, that everyone, no matter if you needed to sell it for financial reasons, you always came back at some point in the Jubilee year to your original inheritance, because it wasn't just, again, a piece of land. It's the essence of who you and your tribe is all about and the way you can serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is what Rut is about. Shiva Sabbat Tammuz is about Yovel. That right now we're fasting on Shiva Sabbat Tammuz, but ultimately it's going to come back to its main essence. Ultimately it's going to come back to its main inheritance, which is the ability to have the first luchos, the ability to learn Torah and not forget it, the ability to be charus on luchos, charus from the malach hamavet. That's what we're hoping to get back to in the Jubilee of time. What was Rut's place? So he knows that the place, Hamakbila l'b'chinata makomhi Beit Lechem Yudah, is none other than Beit Lechem Yudah. And it's no accident in source 15 that Beit Lechem is the place where Rachel Imenu is buried. The essence of Beit Lechem, one of the essences of Beit Lechem, is the place of Rachel, about whom it was promised, Navi of Yirmiah, v'shavu banim l'gvulam, that the people will come back to their original inheritance, the people will come back to their land. V'shavu meretz oyev, they'll come back from Golos. So Beit Lechem, which is the essence of the mitzvah of Yovel, which is about return, represents Rut, who came back to her essence, who came back to her true husband, and was able to become the Ima Shamachus, the mother of royalty. She represents Yudayim B'Tamuz, where ultimately this day is going to come back to its essence and be a Chag L'Hashem Machar, a day of celebration, a day of Sosav HaSimcha, as the Navi Zechariah tells us, a day of tremendous jubilation. As well as she represents this idea of the return in the ultimate sense. Therefore, understandable why the whole last parak of Rut talks about this whole Nachla, right? The Goel, the Redeemer, has asked, you want to redeem the field? I do. I don't want to redeem it with Rut. Like, why is there so much emphasis on the redemption of the field? Because, again, the redeeming of the field, and that's what we see from Benot Slavchat, is not just technical. Who's going to have this piece of land? It's about the continuation of the people who own this land. And by Rut, it's the continuation of her husband, Machlon, to be able to then have children who are going to be able to pick up where they left off. Avi Melech, Eli Melech, to me is Malchus, to be able to be the Ima Shel Malchus, the mother of royalty. If this is what we understand from the daughters of Slavcha, that they understood that the Yerusha, the inheritance, is not just technical, but it's about the deeper aspect of the continuation, the perpetuation of the parents' legacy, albeit we may not have the idea of Benot Slavchat in terms of an inheritance in the land, but the same idea that we can perpetuate the memory of a loved one who's left this world is very much an idea that we are familiar with. And the continuation of their legacy is something we're familiar with. A very, very important sefer that has recently come on the market the last 5-6 years or so is the Neshama Shel Haven Aliyah. It's a sefer which really fills a niche. A lot of sfarim, Elena, we should need them on Avelus, on mourning. What happens after the mourning? What happens during the Shloshim? Not only halachically, emotionally, the Yortzeit, the Shana. And this sefer is just a tremendous sefer. Whenever I go pay a Shiva visit, I mention the sefer to people. One really, if you wanted to have a schutz for the Leo summons, the Shabbat, buy a lot of them and just hand them out at Shabbat visits. It's just a tremendous sefer. So in this sefer, in the Shabbat Shabbat and Aliyah, he speaks about the Gemara and Sanhedrin reveals that the logical basis for performing deeds, liluing the Shema, a concept called Bara Mizake Abba, that a son can help his father to attain merit. And the Sefer Chassidim illustrates when the father himself is a habitual sinner, but he sees to it that his son studied Torah to perform good deeds, since the righteousness of the child comes about through the father. So then the father gains atonement for his sins through the son's righteousness. And then he goes on to say that many other sources indicate the child's action benefit departed parent even when the parent had no input whatsoever in his son's meritorious deeds. In fact, even in the most extreme cases, the good deed of a child has an effect on the parent. The Chafetz Chaim stated in 17, through any mitzvah, the meritorious acts that one's offering fulfills after his passing, the father's soul receives atonement. Through the power of their deeds, children have the ability to not only spare the departed parents from suffering further sins in the next world, but also to affect their entry into Gan Eden. That's why we know that there's an idea after during the first year that children say when they mention a parent's name, Hareini Kaparat Mishkavo or Mishkava, that I am a kapara, I'm an atonement for the person who has left this world, that all my actions help this person receive higher entry into Gan Eden. Even after the parent's souls entered Gan Eden, the children's deeds continue. Elevate the soul to even higher levels of ecstasy and grandeur. The Shlach states that all this applies to any parent, regardless of the parent's own measure, because the parent is an extension, the son is an extension of the parent. When a Jewish mother passes away, writes Rabbeinu Yonah, and her children are God-fearing and occupied with Torah and mitzvot, it's considered if she herself is alive and performing all these deeds. What's the idea symbolically of that the child is the leg of the parent? Why that part of the body? So Rav Huttner Zatzal explains that the leg is the only limb with which a person moves. Without it, he'd be completely stationary. And that's indeed the major difference between a person and a malach. A malach is referred to pasuk in Zechariah as a omed, ben ha'omdi ma'ela, those who are standing. A person is a mahalach, those who walk, those who are able to advance. In this sense, a human being is constantly on the move. And all this applies only during a person's lifetime in 18, once he passes away. His opportunities for growth have ended. As explained above, the level he attained through whatever deeds he performed while alive will now remain forever. He too, like the angels, has become one who stands. However, Rav Huttner explains that this is the point that Bara Kara Davuha take effect. Through this remarkable arrangement, the departed actually have a way of retaining a foothold on this earth, this incredible world of merit gaining potential. The departed has left behind meritorious offspring, legs, so to speak. There exists the possibility of continuing to walk despite having passed away and to ascend from one level to another. However, he knows in truth this concept is not just limited to the parent-child relationship. It can be done for any relative or indeed for any human being. That what this person does, the difference he notes is that anything a child does, even without saying this is Leilui Nishmat, this is for the merit of my parent, whatever a child does has a positive effect on the parent. When it comes to a different relative or a friend or a neighbor or whoever you're dedicating it for, so then it should be specified. I am doing this act of stucca. I'm doing, dedicating the shir, whatever it is, lilui nishmas for the merit of, and mention the person's name. So that has to be earmarked, so to speak, specifically, while a child, it's automatic, everything that the child does. Now, having said this, there's a deeper idea, and that is that not only that whatever a child does should be on the account of the parent, the Sukkah Shalom in 19 suggests that a mourner choose a specific mitzvah during this first Shana to designate as his personal project. In other words, regarding this particular mitzvah, whatever he chooses, the mourner devotes his energies towards a scrupulous fulfillment. And the reason for this is it involves physical action. It involves mamish, the world of mindset. Another element suggested by Sukkah Shalom is to increase the effect even further would be to select a mitzvah that includes a positive benefit for the general public. Another valid consideration is the departed himself. Seemingly, it would be most appropriate to engage in a mitzvah that the departed was known to excel in or to take a particular interest in during his lifetime. And again, this is exactly what we were talking about, Benot Tzlafchad. Benot Tzlafchad didn't just want the inheritance of the land. Benot Tzlafchad wanted to continue to perpetuate their specialness of what their father was about. And the land was just a medium of being able to focus you on what their avodah is. It's an avodah in Beit Lechem. There's an avodah in Haifa. There's an avodah in different places. They wanted to tap into that avodah to be able to serve Hashem as a continuation of what their father did. Likewise, when a person departs from this world, to be able to take on a project that's going to be mezakeh the rabbi, that's going to help other people in the schus, in the merit of this person that departed, should preferably be in, you know, something that the person was interested in themselves. It doesn't have to be. And then it's a continuation of their legacy over and over again. And again, as he suggests, the best thing would be to be something that is, that the tzibur, that the people could use. Just to give personal examples, right now, as I speak, it's Erev Shabbos, going on in our machsan is the Gemach of Books, is a library of books that kids come and go. On, we open 3 days a week. On Friday, we have between 60 and 80 families that take out books. We're talking about hundreds of books. We open this Gemach in Lilui Nishmas, in the memory of my mother, Allah Shalom, who had tremendous amounts of qualities. It's almost like impossible to choose among. However, one of the things that she was very into, she worked for a Meet Woman, was making sure that other, that people should be helped, that people should be given the most resources possible. And particularly in Eretz Yisrael, when Olim come, even though we have a large clientele of Israelis, when Olim come to get their Hebrew up to par, reading is one of those things that is so important. To be able to afford, allow kids to be able to read and be able to develop themselves in this way is a continuation of her legacy, and Bechaste Hashem, it's been going on for years. A second example, and this is a relative but less directly, is my sister-in-law, who was named Sarah 5 years ago. We bought around 50 chumashim in the back sidurim for shul in the women's section. And I'll tell you, 5 years later, even every time I'm writing her name in it, every time someone takes a sitter to use or the chumash to use, I feel such a good feeling that her neshama is going higher and higher in Shamayim. Here's a person who came to Yiddishkeit on her own without coming from a religious family. And she was able to really withstand all the pressures and be able to show that Yiddishkeit is supreme. You know, just to share a great story that I heard from her father at the Shiva, is that when she was beginning to become a Balas Tshuva, and she brought her parents back with her, her father was the mayor of the city that they were in, and he was very into, let's end Shabbos right at the time, and so I can get to work. And she always wanted to keep Shabbos a few minutes later. So what she would do was, she would go to the bathroom, and he would have to wait for her to make Havdalah. And eventually he caught on. And when it was like, you know, on the clock, you know, 7:02, you can make Havdalah, he would say to her, okay, Beth, now it's time for you to go to the bathroom, because I need to make Havdalah. Like, it became a joke already. This was the person who wanted and stood strong in keeping her Yiddishkeit and able to pass this on to her children to keep the Yiddishkeit strong. So again, to be mitzakeh the rabbi in tefillah, in limud Torah, in hearing kriyas Torah, is a schus for her neshama as well. To think of things that people can do to continue this neshama. And that's why, as a Chochmana Matzmun, quoting Musra Adas, points out, if you take a look in 21, the difference between Korach and Benot Tzlafchad, where both are asking for what we would think is, you know, more of. By Korach, he dies. But by Benot Tzlafchad, they get a parsha in the Torah. And as he knows, what is really driving you? What is your goal? Benot Tzlafchad bikshu kvod shamayim. This is the greatness of Benot Tzlafchad, ending level one. They were into Kvod Shamayim. They were into how can we serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu better. We're into being able to be loyal to our family tradition. Well, Korach was into Kvod Atzmo, was interested in his own honor and his own prestige. And that's the main difference between the two. So level number one, my friends, what's the chachma of Benot Slavcha, the tzidkus of Benot Slavcha? They didn't get married. They wanted to know what their tafkid was. It was all about Avodas Hashem. It wasn't about themselves. It's how do we perpetuate the memory of our father. And this is something that we have, that every action we do perpetuates the memory of loved ones, and to take on a specific project that, you know, shouldn't just be for the Shana, should be for years later, if possible, that this is a project that we are doing in memory of. The second level. Notes the Tifa Torah. There's a Rashi, L'mishpachat Menashe ben Yosef. Why does the genealogy go all the way back to Yosef? Lama Nemar just should say, you know, Slavcha, you know, these are the names of the children of Slavcha. Why would we go all the way back? It says Ben Menashe, they were from the tribe of Menashe. Why do you have to mention Yosef? El Lamar Lacha to teach you, says Rashi, Yosef chivevet to Aret. Yosef loved the land, and the land was endeared to him, as it says, Valitim et Tatzvotai, take my bones out of Eretz Yisrael and bring them to the land of Egypt. Ubinotav chivevu et Aret, and his daughters loved the land, as it says, Tirah lanu achuzah, to teach you that all the people here were tzaddikim, were righteous people. Benot Slavchad were the seventh generation from Yosef HaTzadik, Nosativa Torah. Yosef HaTzadik had this quality in him that he didn't want to be buried in Egypt. He wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, and that had an effect generations later that his great-great-great-granddaughters wanted to have an inheritance in Eretz Yisrael. And this is the limud for us. Shekol Mashadem will say, whatever we do, Mashpila Dorot Acharav, has an imprint in generations afterwards. If our children, you know, act in certain ways, or we act in certain ways of Midos Tovot, it very well could be that our great-great-grandparents excelled in this Mida, and it has been given to us as a legacy, of this genetic DNA. V'zu achriyot l'chol echad. Everyone has to have this responsibility that we know that not only are we the recipients of what came before us, but we also imprint what's going to come after us. Don't think it just impacts our children. It impacts our great-grandchildren, our great-great-grandchildren. You see, seven generations later, this love of Eretz Yisrael. Just to show another example of where you see that the actions of one person has an effect on so many generations later is the next parsha, next week in Matos. Itam Medrash Rabbah 24, Pasuk tells us in Breishit, Vayelech Ruven Meikir Sir Chidim, Ruven went in the time of the harvest, Chanoch Longar Pidarko Gam Ki Yaskin Lo Yastim Rimenu, to train a child when he's young, and when he's old, he won't deviate. And this is connected to Yitanat Aretz Hazot Lavadecha, that the children of Reuven, right, with God and Chatzi Sheva Menashe, wanted a portion in the Ever Hanar, in the Jordan, in the east bank of the river. And this is connected to Reuven going out in Ksir Chiti. Ask the Dashraga, Rashraga Grosvart Zatzal, what's the connection between the two? So simply put, we would say that just like Reuven was careful to take from the hefker, to take from that which was ownerless, and he was careful not to steal, so too his descendants afterwards were careful not to take, because they had a lot of cattle, land, where the cattle made graves and land that didn't belong to them. Therefore, they asked to be on the other side of the Jordan so they'd be able to have plenty of pasture land, and that way, just like their forefather Reuven, be very careful about Gezel, about not stealing. And that's definitely one approach of the Medrash. However, we know that Reuven, God, and Chatzi Sheva Menashe are criticized for taking this part of the land and not going to Eretz Yisrael. So that's why Rav Grossbard points out, it's how that you can see the action of Reuven on a negative level. And that is, why is Reuven going out? He makes Sir Chitim. He's looking for things. He's not satisfied with what he has in his house. The asterisks in 24. He's not satisfied with what he has, and he's going to look for more things in the field. For sure, he was careful to take from that which was ownerless. But there was a certain nitiya, a certain small aspect of chipus mamon, of wanting to have more than he already had, and not being satisfied with what he had. That small desire for things that were beyond that he had is what affected his children, his descendants, not to be satisfied with their portion in Eretz Yisrael, but to have a larger portion, to have more. And this is why they ask for a land outside of Eretz Yisrael. So that you see it, and it's very scary, that little minute things that a father, grandfather, obviously we're talking about Avos HaOlam here, are doing, have such an effect generations later. In the positive, Yosef was Mechave the Darit, he wanted to be buried there, but El Safchad loved the land. On the negative, Reuven went out to search for beyond what he had, and his children want this as well. As he quotes here the famous line of the Saba Slobodka, a Jew can't be a ganav. It's impossible for a Jew to steal. So you know that if you see a Jew stealing, that you have to look back. And probably his grandfather was stealing people's opinion, that he made himself out to be someone he really wasn't. And his father probably stole Chidushei Torah, saying things that he saw from other people in his own name. And then it's no wonder that the child becomes a ganav, the child becomes a thief, because there's this effect of one generation after the other. Good. When we understand this, we understand that what was the greatness of Benot Slavchan, that they took in this quality of Yosef HaTzadik, of loving Eretz Yisrael. And this is Sichos Musar in 26, says something about it. V'hinei yesh litpalel aleinu. It says it's a wonder for us. Shanu darim be'Eretz Yisrael. We live in Eretz Yisrael. If we don't live here, then we come visit here often. We don't walk around feeling this influence on us. Well, Peshar Davari says the reason is this very idea of appreciation. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Hashem, just like Yosef's bones were brought up to Eretz Yisrael, let my bones be brought up. To which Hashem said, Misho da b'artzo nikbar b'artzo. Only one who admits from coming to a connected for Eretz Yisrael can be buried in Eretz Yisrael. By Yosef, it says, Gano Gunafti married Tayfrim, that he was stolen, kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews. He admitted he came from the land of Israel. He's allowed to be buried in the land of Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu, when you saved the daughters of Yitro, it said, Ish mitzri yitzi lani hayom, an Egyptian man saved us today. And we see the fact that he's called the Egyptian and not a Jew, he wasn't punished for. But the fact that he didn't stop them and say, I am somebody connected to the land of Israel, we call it an Israeli citizen or whatever that connotation may be, for that he is punished and he's not buried in Eretz Yisrael. And the Sichos Musar of Shmulevitz Atzal notes in the arrow, it's not really a punishment, it's a consequence, it's a messios. If you're not going to be connected to Eretz Yisrael, so then the Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael doesn't want you. Eretz Yisrael will take in those who have some connection to it. I will make mention, if you're probably thinking, whoa, this really isn't fair. Yosef HaTzadik came from Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu came from Egypt. Yosef HaTzadik's family lived in Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu's family lived in Egypt. How can you blame him for being called an Ish Mitzri and he didn't stop himself and say, whoa, hello? So the Zion L'Torah brings this question. I'm just making mention of it parenthetically, but it's Gvaldik of Zion L'Torah. He raises our question in 27, Gechav Shar Hayalu Lamar Acheret in the squidly. Shelo Yishtakeh. He's not supposed to lie. So he says here, and then he gets punished. Mishol Daber Tzonik Bayer Retzvo. So he answers, double underline 28, Kishisho Alim, we therefore see, from the moment Avraham Avinu gets the promise of Eretz Yisrael and the Brit Ben Absarim in the covenant of the pieces, until today. Ad Sof Kol Doros, until the end of generations. Kishisho Alim et Ish Yehudi. You ask any Jew, and it doesn't matter where he's from, Australia, India, Japan, America, it doesn't matter. Me'eza eretz ata, from which land are you in? The asterisks, alav la note, he should answer, me'eretz Yisrael ani, I'm from the land of Israel. Avstas rasaratskin, this is tells Torah. Avstalo hayashama olam lohu v'lo harav, even if he never entered the land of Israel, or his parents never did. Wa, and if not, hu chote neged artso. Because once Avraham Avinu was given the promise of the land of Israel, it becomes ours. And every Jew is connected to this land. This is our nationality. This is our essence. You know, I've told this story before. It's one of my favorite ones. when I came back from a trip to Israel, and I was 15, 16 years old, and I was very into Israel after this trip, you know, rah-rah, gung-ho, and I get to the passport control in America, and they asked me, what country are you a citizen of? And I said, Israel. You know, I was really, you know, so Zimatar without even knowing it at that time. And she looked at me, she said, you're from Israel? I said, yes, I'm from Israel. And, you know, I didn't have Israeli citizenship. I was just there for 2 months, right? So she looked at me. She knew as a kid, she says, where's your library card from? I don't know if people still have library cards these days. But then we had those library cards. You remember what they looked like? Yeah, sometimes. This is even for pictures on your library card. Some of you are still with me here. Yeah. So she says, where's your library card from? So I said, Yonkers, New York. She says, okay, you're an American citizen and move me forward. Okay, so, you know, start up with with these people here. They don't understand the Osama Torah. I grant you that. But the mindset is, this is where we are from. And that's why in 29, that Eretz Yisrael has a personality. And that's why we know that if we don't keep the Shemitah, we don't hold by giving the land what it needs, then we have golos. I mean, we start the period of the 3 weeks because we're not appreciating the godless of Eretz Yisrael. In order to be able to get the tremendous energy that's found in Eretz Yisrael, the energy of Tamina Ne'ashem Lokecha Bamiration Hashana Ad Akritz Hashana, the Hashkachas of Hashem is very intense here. Yishnai Lokach. There's a condition, and that is you have to feel connected to the land. You have to be molded. You have to be able to realize the greatness of the land, the chashivas of the land. And through this hargasha, and through this feeling, then you're able to enter into the power of the land has to offer you. And indeed, the Ibn Ezra says on Yaakov Avinu, buying a chelkat asadeh by the city of Shechem, to tell you the mala gedola shel Eretz Yisrael, mishe shel chelik ba, one says the Ibn Ezra, who has a portion in Eretz Yisrael, chashufu kichelik lo mabah, this is great. It's considered as a portion in the world to come. But that's only on the condition that you're aware of this. So now I can appreciate Benot Tzlafchad. Benot Tzlafchad Stam didn't say we want to have riches, right? We want to be in any land. Like, you know, Uganda, that would work for us as well. We just want inheritance. No, it was specifically about the Chavivos Ha'aretz, and that's why it's connected back to Yosef. And just like Yosef had the Chavivos Ha'aretz, that's the quality that they are expressing as well. Notes from Shlomo Meir Druck in Eish Tamid from the Chasam Sofer. Well, how do I know that? Maybe indeed it wasn't about Chavivos Eretz Yisrael. Maybe it was indeed that they just wanted a piece of land and they were looking for physical riches. So he says, the answer is simple, he says. Benot Tzlafchad came from Sheva Menashe. As we just mentioned, part of Menashe lived on the other side of the Yarden. So if it wasn't about Chavivos Eretz Yisrael, if it wasn't about how special Eretz Yisrael was, then they would have been satisfied to stay where they were, guaranteed a portion on the other side of the Yarden. They don't want that. They want to be in Eretz Yisrael. The fact that they desire to be in Eretz Yisrael and not just take a portion outside of Eretz Yisrael, you see clearly no Sechach and Sofer had nothing to do with just a piece of land. It had to do with the Chavivos Ha'aretz, how beloved the land was. And as the Mishchat Shemin, Rav Kofman notes in Source 32, it doesn't say Avas Ha'aretz, it says Chavivos Ha'aretz. Because when it's talking about love, it's really self-love, right? I love to eat fish. Well, if you love to eat fish, then why'd you kill the fish and eat it? You don't love fish. I love me, and I love me, so I love to kill fish to eat for my pleasure. So when we're talking about Chavivos Ha'aretz, it's not about self-love, it's love of the land. It's love of being able to be part of this, of Eretz Yisrael. And as the Ol Moshe of Scheinerman 33 points out, one who is makir u'marich chashivut, when one appreciates the importance of something, then it takes on a whole different quality. Chacham lev yikach mitzvos. The wise person takes mitzvos. Why are they chachamos? Why are they wise? Because, considered wise, because they understood the beauty and value of Eretz Yisrael, that there are mitzvos that can only be done there. They understand the malas and kedushas ha'aretz, the holiness and the greatness of the land, and that's what they wanted. So it's not just that they were mechavot at the aretz, that the land was endeared to them. It was much more. It's what the land represented that was endeared to them. That was a place to do avodas Hashem. And that's why the land was beloved, not just themselves. It was not about them on both levels. It was about kvod shemayim. We can do more mitzvot. We can bring more kvod shemayim into this world. And we know, he says, shekedei lizkot ledavar, in order to really receive something, sarich la'akir chashivoto, you have to know the importance of something. And that is why he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos at the end of 34, that one of the reasons Yerushalayim was destroyed, it was because they didn't appreciate the maila of the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't appreciate the specialness of Yerushalayim. And if you don't appreciate something, Hashem says, well, obviously, you don't need it because you don't appreciate it. The greatness of Benot Slavchad was their appreciation, was their love of Eretz Yisrael. This dovetails very beautifully before we do our final idea, Mirtz Hashem, with Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, and Drash Moshe Ala Torah. He says, it must be that if a person truly loves something, he'll desire that it should be his and not be satisfied with having it before belong to others, even if he would have access to it. That's why, even though they were going to go into the land, that wasn't sufficient for them. They wanted their Nachlan Eretz Yisrael. They wanted their piece of land. The Torah therefore testifies that because of their love for the land, they demanded a share in it, a share which must be their own personal property. With this reasoning, we can understand why the Torah commanded that everyone write a Sefer Torah for himself. And according to the Rush in Torah Yerodea 270, it requires that everyone purchase Sfarim. It's not enough to borrow Sfarim from others because of the love of the mitzvah of learning Torah demands that the Sefer Torah or the Sfarim be one's own property. So when a person goes out and buys Sfarim, I like this idea because thank God we have thousands of them with no room and continuing to buy. It's love for them. Right? If you love something, you always make room for it, and you always can treat it with the appropriate. I read one somewhere, and I like quoting this, is that a Torah is supposed to be Torah's Chayim, a living Torah. So therefore, a living room should be a room with a lot of Torah on it. So when people come into our house and they see Svarim flying all over the living room, I say, Baruch Hashem, it's a living room. It's a room that's living Torah's Chayim with living Torah. With this in mind, says Rav Moshe, it's very interesting that it wasn't that they initiated this love of the land, but rather they're continuing the love that they got from Yosef HaTzadik. Why? It says in the bracket, if a person performs a deed because he himself feels that it should be done, he is satisfied no matter how he performs it, since the deed itself was performed by his own initiative, and that alone is a great accomplishment. Should he perform an action because he learned it from his ancestors, however, the actual performance in itself to be expected. He therefore does not consider that an accomplishment. The only accomplishment is that what he adds to the deed, namely the love and enthusiasm for the mitzvah. But no, Slavka were not praised for the love of the land but that they felt, but for the love which they demonstrated for the land. It's not enough just to love the land that they got from Yosef, but the fact that they go out and demand the land and want the land and are ready to pose this question shows their chavivos of Eretz Yisrael. Now, let's just see what we see now, and we'll end with one final idea, very, very fundamental. B'nai Slavchad, what was their chachma? That they understood what the Nachla is about. It's about not just a piece of land, perpetuating the avoda of what a parent is about to continue their legacy. And that's really what we hope for. That's the greatest gift we can give our children, so they see clearly what was important for us, and that they should continue to file suit. On the second level, the Benot Slavchad got from their ancestor Yosef the Chavivos Haaretz, that they wanted a part of Eretz Yisrael, not just the other side of the Yarden, but mamish in Eretz Yisrael itself. And that if you really want something, you have to appreciate it. You have to really desire it. And that was what was special about these women, that they dafka wanted a part in Eretz Yisrael to perform the mitzvot, atulios fa'aretz, and therefore that's why they demanded this land specifically. So we're left with our final question. So if they were meant to have this land, then why wasn't it in the Gora? Why wasn't it in the lottery? Why did they need to ask for it? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu acquiesce? So the Gevaldik priest in the Drash David, we know there's a machloket brought down at 37 about how the land was apportioned. Rabbi Yonasan argues from our verse, La'ela techalei ka'aretz, found in our parsha, that the land was allotted on the basis of the count of those who entered it. That is the count given here. However, Rabbi Yoshia points to verse 55, which states, according to the names of their father's tribe shall they inherit, implying that the count established at the time of the exit from Egypt is the controlling factor. And this is the machloket at who really inherited the land. Did the people from Egypt, they were the ones who left Egypt, they were the ones who were getting the land, albeit they died, so now their children are taking from them, or no? Who really gets the land? It's those who are alive now. They getting the land, almost in retrospect, gives the land back to their forefathers, but the land really belongs to them. No, Drush Duffy, what are we really arguing about? So he says, if you hold that the land was Shield Sabi Sraim Haim Elu 38, Shizachul Aretz, we understand. If they deserve the land, and now it's given over as an inheritance, that makes sense. But what does it mean that those who are entering the land are inheriting it almost retroactively for their parents? Like, that seems backwards. So he says, you're right. Technically, those who left Egypt should have had a part in Eretz Yisrael. But the problem is, if a person doesn't put in effort through davening, through mitzvos, through attitude, whatever it is, to get something, albeit that they're deserving, then they're not going to get it. It's not automatic. Like we say in Pirkei Avos, every Jew has a portion of the world to come, which means everyone has a place that they'll merit in the world to come. But you know what? You got to do something to merit it. You got you have it in potential, but now what? What are you going to do with it? Likewise, he says here, everyone had a portion in Eretz Yisrael. However, if they didn't desire Eretz Yisrael, they didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, they didn't show that this was important for them, so they lost it. It's not like it's guaranteed that you're going to have it. Every gift that Hashem gives us, and this is an important yesod, it's not a guarantee that even though we're supposed to have this gift, that we will get it. We have to daven for it. We have to show that this is really worthwhile for us and that it's meaningful for us. Otherwise, even that which could be deserving for us, we won't get. The classic example is Eliyahu HaNavi on Har Carmel. After the people say Hashem Elokim, Hashem had told Eliyahu, go tell Ahav there's going to be rain. Hashem promised there was going to be rain, right? There was a drought for a couple of months. Eliyahu HaNavi goes up to Har Carmel and he davens for rain. Ah, Hashem said there's going to be rain. That's very nice. But there's no guarantee. You have to daven. You have to desire. You have to look toward the sea. Is there a cloud coming? You have to take a proactive thing. So now we understand that the people who left Egypt said, let's go back to Egypt. They didn't want to play the Eretz Yisrael. So because they didn't show that they wanted it, they didn't do anything to desire it, they lost. They're chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Me'ita, however, 40 b'neihem barei ha'aretz, those who were entering the land, fixed this. How? By fighting for the land. By entering to land and being ready to die for Mesiris Nefesh for the land. And in that way, their mitzvahed, their parents, the Yotzei Mitzrayim, to now retroactively have a portion in the land. But the children had to do something to actively show that they desired this land. I understand the boys that are going out to fight, that they showed that they were deserving of this land. That's why comes Benos Lavchad and they say, whoa, what do? Our father died. And if you're going to say to me that the children have to prove through Mesiris Nefesh that they are worthy of having this land, we can't do that. There was no sons or only daughters. And daughters don't go out to fight. So now what are we supposed to do? So by them showing that they desired the land, by them coming and asking this question, that desiring, that Mesiris Nefesh, that was what Benos Lavchad needed in order to now bring them worthy of the portion of the land. They weren't part of the Goral because the Goral was based on the sons who are going to go out to fight to prove that they wanted the land. So they weren't in that original camp. However, when they come and say, okay, we can't fight and therefore we're not in the Goral, in the lottery, but this is really what we want and this is what we desire. At that moment, Hashem says, your desiring and your wanting is enough. Kein b'nos lavchad dovro, that is enough. That showing, that desire, that they indeed get a portion of the land. And in Parashat Zu 43, the asterisk on Ulamedim, Shekol Atova Shefa Yodim Lanatam Linatein Lada, that all goodness that is meant to be given to us, Lo Yitnu Lo Belo Shiva Kesh V'Yamol Kadei LeKablam. You can't sit back and expect it to happen. You want a shidduch? You got to daven for it. Say Shir Hashim for 40 days. Go to Shadchanim. You want a parnasa? Go check out the ads. Daven for it. You got to be proactive. Even if there was a gzeira not to get this goodness, through davening to Hashem, through showing you really want it, you can turn over a gzeira, a decree, and we find by Benot Slavcha that even though the Goral said that they weren't going to get a chelik and nachla, an inheritance in Eretz Yisrael, because they desired it and they asked for it, zachula kabel chelik ba'aretz kishar ba'aretz, they got it like everybody else. Our job is tefillah, is bakasha, is asking. And this indeed, as our final idea, is a yesod for our lives. We've spoken about this many times. The Drash David in Parsha Re'eh develops this idea. He brings the Malbim. Now when Eshet Ovadia had nothing in her house but a little bit of oil, and Elisha said, go gather as many empty vessels as possible and start pouring, and then the oil will multiply and fill up all the vessels. So when she does that, and the vessels are then filled, and there are no more empty vessels, Vayamod Hashem, and the oil stops. Why? The Malbim says, Mubuar Shayat Sarach Bachanat Kelim, that you need to prepare the vessels in the bracket of 44, Kedei Lekabel Tabracha, in order to get blessing from Hashem. Once the Kelim were finished, the Bracha stopped. And it wasn't a chance that you can get new Kelim at that point. That's it. You have to prepare in order for this particular bracha to be found with you. And this is the bracha in physical things, he says, as well as in ruchnias. And that's pshat in the pasuk, Re'eh anochi noten lifnechem habracha v'aklala, Re'eh, singular. Every person needs to look in the bracha and klala, lifnechem, in the different aspects of what life has in front of you. It's in front of every single person. Our job is to create the kelim, the vessels, the vehicles, in order to be able to receive this bracha. And that's the real nekuda in life, that Yoshua in our parsha is chosen to be the leader. Why? So Sforno says, Isha Sheruach Bo, that he's a person who has the willingness to mekabel or pnei shechina, who wants to have this divine light on him. He desires to be somebody who's going to learn and going to grow. When you have that desire, when you make yourself a kli, right? Yoshua was a Masharet. He never left Moshe Rabbeinu's side. When you make yourself a kli, you really want something, what are you doing about it? You want to grow in your Avodas Hashem? Are you following people? Are you learning by examples in this midah, finding people out of this midah and learning from them? Are you davening to Hashem? Are you working on a program of developing this midah? To say, I want something is limited. The time of the 3 weeks is a time of tshuva. It's a time of avodas Hashem. It's a time of saying, if you really want something, you have to prepare the kelim. You have to prepare the vessels in order to receive this bracha. These women, by wanting Eretz Yisrael, by desiring Eretz Yisrael, by appreciating Eretz Yisrael, they were creating the kelim in order to be able, the vehicle, the vessels, to be able to get the bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that, I think, is perhaps the double understanding of the title, Pondering Perpetuate. On the one, we have to ask ourselves to ponder in what way can we perpetuate the memory of loved ones, that it's not just to, you know, read their will and take, you know, their physical possessions, right? You know, inherit their pictures and their couches and whatever, their silver, whatever you're inheriting. But you're inheriting your tchunos hanefesh. You're inheriting their vision and being able to perpetuate that. And the second aspect of pondering perpetuity is really within each and every one of us, that we have to recognize that we have to ask ourselves, how do I want to perpetuate my own life? What vision do I want to give over to my children, to my grandchildren? And the way to do that is to live a life of always growing, of always davening that I can become greater, that I can be able to have the kelim, the vehicle, and the vessels to grow in our avodas Hashem. My friends, this ends for us another year of Torah learning together. Hodu Hashem ki tov kilom chasdo. He should bench us with many more years of learning and growing together. Every year that another year is completed, it's really mamish nisim. to have so much Torah, be able to have such Shiata Deshmaya. Again, Hakar Satov is in order to not let that come, and YUTorah.org for hosting these shiurim week after week. Yasher Koach is in order to all those who help be able to spread the Torah in their specific communities. Honorable mention, or many people, but honorable mention in Brooklyn to Chavi Miller, in Queens to Golda Fried, and in Detroit to Selma Selmar, who week after week make sure that the technical things are running, as well as in all the other communities, those who are involved. And Achrona Achrona Chaviva, the greatest Hakaras HaTov, really goes to Fanny Stein, who writes up the summary week after week. It's hours of work. If I think I have a hard job, I think her job is even harder. I at least understand myself sometimes. For her to understand a complicated shiur and to write it in such a brilliant way is you know, she gets the quiet credit, you know, without the fanfare. And so many people benefit week after week from her beautiful writing up of the summary of the Divrei Torah. We wish her a lot of bracha and nachas from her family, and she should also have many years continuing to help be Marbitz Torah. Wish everybody a healthy summer, and Mirza Shem will come back and Elul rejuvenated and ready with the right kalim to take on the new year.